This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, Dave. This is going to be a fun hour. And if y'all have any, if you have dogs or interact with dogs at all and you have any questions, 504-260-1870, you think you know what they're thinking? I got a new dog, Teddy, and sometimes I don't think he gets my sense of humor as I pass these witty comments along to him. Maybe it's a different point of reference. I don't know. But Brian Hare joins us now, author of Puppy Kindergarten, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Duke. He runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy Tucker. Good morning, New Orleans. Pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm working from home today, and I got my little friend Teddy here with me, and he just, I'm going to start with this since he brought it up. What makes a dog get the zoomies? Where do those come from?
Teddy's got the zoomies, huh?
Yes. He had them. Well, now he's laying down flat like he just got run over by a car, God forbid.
Well, good for him. Yeah, yeah, no, zoomies are all about... something obviously super exciting that a dog is, you know, happy that they're anticipating that is about to happen with you. They're happy to see you, and, you know, it just makes them really excited because maybe we're going to have a good time playing. And the other thing is that zoomies are another sign that, you know, your dog needs exercise all the time. And just like people, dogs need exercise, and so they're just having at it.
Doc, I was playing with this dog for 3 hours yesterday, and eventually he looked at me like he was bored, and it's like, Teddy, I don't know what to tell you, buddy. That's life. It's not always 100% exciting. There are boring moments. Do dogs need to be entertained constantly? What's going on here?
No, they don't need to be entertained constantly, but at Duke, and the topic of the puppy kindergarten, the book we wrote, it's all about how what we learned after we raised 100 service dog puppies. One of the big things we learned is, you know, I don't know if is Teddy still a puppy?
He was born in October. He's a mutt. He's not, and some people take a reference at that. Is that a pejorative term, mutt, by the way?
You know what? I like to call any dog that is of mixed breed an American dog.
All right, an American dog. But Margot Robbie called herself a mutt in Wolf of Wall Street, and I didn't find it offensive. So, you know, anyway, Teddy.
I don't think it's offensive at all. But if he was born in October, or you got him in October, is that what you said?
Born in October.
Oh, he's born in October. Okay, so yes, he's still a puppy. So a dog is really is still growing until they're two. They're not really fully grown until they're two. And so when a dog is... 6-8 months of age, they are going to need a lot more activity than they'll need when they're fully grown. So one of the things we learned is a lot of the behavior problems that people encounter, it's really that dogs need a lot of exercise. And, you know, when we had any problem behaviors of the, you know, over 100 puppies we raised, if we looked at the exercise they were getting and we, you know, kind of bumped it up a little bit, then a lot of the troubles we were having would go away with those dogs. So it is true that they don't need constant entertainment, but they do need a lot of exercise. And so I'm sure Teddy is giving you a run for his money if he's that age.
Yeah, well, sometimes I got to carry him back because I'll outwalk him. You wrote the first book Genius of Dogs. You and your wife Vanessa wrote it, Puppy Kindergarten. Tell me about the work of the Duke Canine Cognition Center. What is all that about?
Well, we've been working on lots of things to understand the problems that dogs can solve and some of the problems they can't solve, and we're using that information to try to help with training and how we can improve predictions about which dogs will be most trainable to do all the amazing jobs that dogs do today. You know, with all the technology that we have, you'd think that dogs are kind of obsolete, but they have more jobs than ever, whether it's searching for things, drugs or bombs, et cetera, or even endangered animals. And then there's dogs that help people with all sorts of disabilities, whether it's physical or just needing, you know, a dog that can help you, you know, stay calm or feel confident. One of my favorite things is we've had dogs that we've helped raise for Canine Companions, our main partner in the service dog world. And one of our most proudest accomplishments is we've had a dog that we helped raise and had a student help raise who went on to be a courtroom dog. And it's a dog that stays with kids when they're having to testify and allows the kid to feel confident and so they're not afraid in what would otherwise be a really scary moment in their life. So we're studying how to help identify and have dogs succeed at training for all these really important jobs. And we're learning things that are relevant to you at home, too.
Somebody texted in and said, because I want to bring the audience in here in our conversation, we'll wax and wane. Can you teach an old dog new tricks?
Absolutely. Dogs can learn throughout their lives. They do have cognitive decline, which means as they once they reach about the age of 10, they start to experience cognitive decline, and they have a harder time remembering things. They have a harder time inhibiting. But it's only once they reach the age of 10, and they can still learn new things. Just because they're, you know, having a harder time remembering or inhibiting doesn't mean they can't learn new things. Absolutely, a dog can learn throughout their whole life.
Somebody texted in and said, I feel like I'm more of a companion to my dog than the dog is a companion to me. Talk about the whole human-dog relationship, Doctor, if you would.
Well, you know, dogs have a ton of individual variability. As anybody who's had multiple dogs in their life knows that every dog is its own being, its own personality. So sure, there are some dogs that it can feel like you're their companion. Maybe you feel like you're working for them. I get it. I've been there. You know, the relationship that we have with dogs is very special. It goes back over 15,000 years. And we've, you know, our two species have, you know, evolved to live together and socially bond with each other, work together, live and, you know, play together. So it really is a pretty unique relationship.
Somebody texted in, when my dog is sniffing the wind without context to what he's sniffing, what's going on there? Do you know why dogs just sniff the wind, something in the distance? Somebody's cooking burgers or something?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the ability of dogs to smell or use their olfactory sense is pretty remarkable. So if they're smelling, I'm sure they're trying to understand if there's another dog nearby, or maybe they're smelling food or any other you know, chemical that they might be able to detect and understand what it is. I mean, one thing that is oversold, though, is sometimes it's thought that dogs are sort of always using their nose, but it ends up that we have lots of research to show that they really prefer to use their eyes. If they can see something, they'd rather use their visual abilities, and then they kind of go to their noses when they can't see. So, for instance, we have a game we play where they have to find something, that, like a toy or food, and if the lights are on, they prefer to use their eyes, and they actually fail if we hide it and they don't know where it is. They could smell it, but they don't. And as soon as we turn the lights off, they can find it with their nose. It's pretty remarkable. And we turn the lights back on, they can't find it again because they're trying to see where it is, and then we turn the lights off, and then they can find it with their nose. It's pretty cool.
Sounds like you love your work, and you're a lucky man to do it, and your wife as well. The book Puppy Kindergarten, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Somebody texted in, look, I'm going to try to keep this appropriate and not gross or anything like that, but basically, and I go through this myself, where the dog has to go out at night and he's sniffing and sniffing and sniffing, and it's like, okay, I understand when I'm traveling, I know what places have the clean restrooms and which ones don't, and I'm a little picky about that, but when the dog is outside and sniffing the yard, and it seems to take forever until he or she finally decides where they want to, you know, what is going on there, do you know?
So there's a lot. When dogs go to the bathroom, it's not just about relieving themselves. Always, often they're it's like a twofer. They're going to the bathroom and relieving themselves, but if they're, especially if they're out in the neighborhood, off their own sort of normal place they hang out, they're leaving information for others. They're trying to say, "Hey, I was here," and it's a way to communicate because they're so old, you know, they use their sense of smell so much that they can leave a message for all the other dogs. And so they're reading the newspaper. They're when they're out sniffing around trying to figure out, you know, where do they want to leave their next article about themselves? Do they want to leave it, you know, where there's some old, you know, news that's from so long ago that it's not that interesting? Or, you know, maybe they'll leave some information when they go to the bathroom where a lot of dogs have been recently. So they're probably looking for a place that's going to be, you know, likely that someone's going to read their news that they leave and make.
Well, when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I want to get back to bed, I wish you'd read a little bit more quickly. We're talking to Dr. Brian Hare, author of Puppy Kindergarten. We'll talk more about the book about raising the perfect dog, a professor of psychology, neuroscience at Duke University, runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center, been studying dogs for a long, long time. He's probably forgotten more than most of us will ever know. Somebody texted in about cobbing. We'll talk about that. And my buddy Teddy has a little issue with that until I tell him to stop. And if y'all have any questions about raising dogs, types of dogs, dog behavior, etc., please text them into the Oquinar Jeweler Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. And I'll pass them along to Dr. Hare when we come back. 920, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Thank you, Dave. This is going to be a fun hour. And if y'all have any, if you have dogs or interact with dogs at all and you have any questions, 504-260-1870, you think you know what they're thinking? You know, I got a new dog, Teddy, and sometimes I don't think he gets my sense of humor as I pass these witty comments along to him. Maybe it's a different point of reference. I don't know. But Brian Hare joins us now, author of Puppy Kindergarten, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Duke. He runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy Tucker. Good morning, New Orleans. Pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm working from home today, and I got my little friend Teddy here with me, and he just, I'm going to start with this since he brought it up. What makes a dog get the zoomies? Where do those come from?
Teddy's got the zoomies, huh?
Yeah, he had them. Well, now he's laying down flat like he just got run over by a car, God forbid.
Well, good for him. Yeah, no, zoomies are all about, you know, something obviously super exciting that a dog is, you know, happy that they're anticipating that is about to happen with you. They're happy to see you, and, you know, it just makes them really excited because maybe we're going to have a good time playing. And the other thing is that zoomies are another sign that, you know, your dog needs exercise all the time. And just like people, dogs need exercise, and so they're just having at it.
Doc, I was playing with this dog for 3 hours yesterday, and eventually he looked at me like he was bored, and it's like, Teddy, I don't know what to tell you, buddy. That's life. It's not always 100% exciting. There are boring moments. Do dogs need to be entertained constantly? What's going on here?
No, they don't need to be entertained constantly. But at Duke, and the topic of the puppy kindergarten, the book we wrote, it's all about how what we learned after we raised 100 service dog puppies. And so one of the big things we learned is, you know, I don't know if is Teddy still a puppy?
He was born in October. He's a mutt. He's not, and some people take a reference at that. Is that a pejorative term, mutt, by the way?
You know what? I like to call any dog that is of mixed breed an American dog.
All right, an American dog. But Margot Robbie called herself a mutt in Wolf of Wall Street, and I didn't find it offensive. So, you know, anyway,
I don't think it's offensive at all. But if he was born in October, or you got him in October, is that what you said?
Born in October.
Oh, he's born in October. Okay, so yes, he's still a puppy. So a dog is really is still growing until they're two. They're not really fully grown until they're two. And so when a dog is, you know, 6-8 months of age, they are going to need a lot more activity than they'll need when they're fully grown. So one of the things we learned is a lot of the behavior problems that people encounter, it's really that dogs need a lot of exercise. And, you know, if when we had any problem behaviors of the, you know, over 100 puppies we raised, if we looked at the exercise they were getting and we, you know, kind of bumped it up a little bit, then a lot of the troubles we were having would go away with those dogs. So it is true that they don't need constant entertainment, but they do need a lot of exercise. And so I'm sure Teddy is giving you a run for his money if he's that age.
Yeah, well, sometimes I got to carry him back because I'll outwalk him. You wrote the first book.
There you go.
Genius of Dogs, you and your wife Vanessa wrote it, Puppy Kindergarten. Tell me about the work of the Duke Canine Cognition Center. What is all that about?
Well, we've been working on lots of things to understand the problems that dogs can solve and some of the problems they can't solve, and we're using that information to try to help with training and how we can improve predictions about which dogs will be most trainable to do all the amazing jobs that dogs do today. You know, with all the technology that we have, you'd think that dogs are kind of obsolete, but they have more jobs than ever, whether it's searching for things, drugs or bombs, et cetera, or even endangered animals. And then there's dogs that help people with all sorts of disabilities, whether it's physical or just needing, you know, a dog that can help you, you know, stay calm or feel confident. One of my favorite things is we've had dogs that we've helped raise for Canine Companions, our main partner in the service dog world. And one of our most proudest accomplishments is we've had a dog that we helped raise and had a student help raise who went on to be a courtroom dog. And it's a dog that stays with kids when they're having to testify, and allows the kid to feel confident and so they're not afraid in what would otherwise be a really scary moment in their life. So we're studying how to help identify and have dogs succeed at training for all these really important jobs. And we're learning things that are relevant to you at home, too.
Somebody texted in and said, because I want to bring the audience in here in our conversation, we'll wax and wane. Can you teach an old dog new tricks?
Absolutely. Dogs can learn throughout their lives. They do have cognitive decline, which means as they once they reach about the age of 10, they start to experience cognitive decline and they have a harder time remembering things. They have a harder time inhibiting. But it's only once they reach the age of 10, and they can still learn new things. Just because they're, you know, having a harder time remembering or inhibiting doesn't mean they can't learn new things. Absolutely, a dog can learn throughout their whole life.
Somebody texted in and said, I feel like I'm more of a companion to my dog than the dog is a companion to me. Talk about the whole human-dog relationship, Doctor, if you would.
Well, you know, dogs have a ton of individual variability. As anybody who's had multiple dogs in their life knows that every dog is its own being, its own personality. So sure, there are some dogs that it can feel like you're their companion. Maybe you even feel like you're working for them. I get it. I've been there. You know, the relationship that we have with dogs is very special. It goes back over 15,000 years. And our two species have, you know, evolved to live together and socially bond with each other, work together, live and, you know, play together. So it really is a pretty unique relationship.
Somebody texted in, when my dog is sniffing the wind without context to what he's sniffing, what's going on there? Do you know why dogs just sniff the wind? Something in the distance? Somebody's cooking burgers or something?
Obviously the ability of dogs to smell or use their olfactory sense is pretty remarkable. So if they're smelling, I'm sure they're trying to understand if there's another dog nearby, or maybe they're smelling food or any other chemical that they might be able to detect and understand what it is. One thing that is oversold, though, is sometimes it's thought that dogs are sort of always using their nose, but it ends up that we have lots of research to show that they really prefer to use their eyes. If they can see something, they'd rather use their visual abilities, and then they kind of go to their noses when they can't see. So, for instance, we have a game we play where they have to find something that, like a toy or food, and if the lights are on, they prefer to use their eyes, and they actually fail if we hide it and they don't know where it is. They could smell it, but they don't. And as soon as we turn the lights off, they can find it with their nose. It's pretty remarkable. And we turn the lights back on, they can't find it again because they're trying to see where it is, and then we turn the lights off, and then they can find it with their nose. It's pretty cool.
Sounds like you love your work, and you're a lucky man to do it, and your wife as well. The book Puppy Kindergarten, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Somebody texted in, look, I'm going to try to keep this appropriate and not gross or anything like that, but basically, and I go through this myself, where the dog has to go out at night and he's sniffing and sniffing and sniffing, and it's like, okay, I understand when I'm traveling, I know what places have the clean restrooms and which ones don't, and I'm a little picky about that. But when the dog is outside and sniffing the yard, and it seems to take forever until he or she finally decides where they want to, you know, what is going on there? Do you know?
So there's a lot. When dogs go to the bathroom, it's not just about relieving themselves. Always. Often they're, it's like a twofer. They're going to the bathroom and relieving themselves, but if they're, especially if they're out in the neighborhood, off their own sort of normal place they hang out, they're leaving information for others. They're trying to say, hey, I was here, and it's a way to communicate because they're so, you know, they use their sense of smell so much that they can leave a message for all the other dogs. And so they're reading the newspaper. They're when they're out sniffing around trying to figure out, you know, where do they want to leave their next article about themselves? Do they want to leave it, you know, where there's some old, you know, news that's from so long ago that it's not that interesting? Or, you know, maybe they'll leave some information when they go to the bathroom where a lot of dogs have been recently. So they're probably looking for a place that's going to be, you know, likely that someone's going to read their news that they leave and make.
Well, when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I want to get back to bed, I wish you'd read a little bit more quickly. We're talking to Dr. Brian Hare, author of Puppy Kindergarten. We'll talk more about the book about raising the perfect dog, a professor of psychology, neuroscience at Duke University, runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center, been studying dogs for a long, long time. He's probably forgotten more than most of us will ever know. Somebody texted in about cobbing. We'll talk about that. And my buddy Teddy has a little issue with that until I tell him to stop. And if y'all have any questions about raising dogs, types of dogs, dog behavior, etc., please text them into the Oquinar Jeweler Talk and text line 504-260-1870. And I'll pass them along to Dr. Hare when we come back. 920, Tommy Tucker, WWL. 9:43, 17 till 10, fascinating hour with Dr. Brian Hare, author of Puppy Kindergarten, a professor of psychology, neuroscience at Duke University. He runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center. Doctor, a text comes in and says, my dog enjoys watching inside the mind of a dog. In fact, New Year's Eve when the fireworks were making her nervous, I turned on Inside the Mind of a Dog, and she sat in my chair and watched it and ignored the fireworks, and it calmed her down. So there you go. You got a fan.
That's amazing. I'm so glad it helped.
Let's talk about, well, I'm sure you have more than one fan. Let's talk about a horrible incident last week in New Orleans. Three pit bulls got out, mauled an 81-year-old woman to death while she was putting her garbage out. That brings to mind the question of, you know, somebody texted in about certain breeds are inherently dangerous. People shouldn't be able to own them. There are countries that have taken that action. As I was conducting an interview about this the other day, I got to thinking maybe it's not so much about the breed of the dog as much as the size of the dog. What are your thoughts on all of this as far as are some breeds inherently dangerous? I know, real quick, I'll tell you, I was at Petco years ago, saw a smaller man walking a cane corso, and he was not in control of this dog at all. And I was wondering, worried about the safety of him and everybody in the store, including myself at that moment. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I'm so sorry to hear that story. It's horrifying to hear that this happened to someone who, you know, completely unjustified and horrific to hear. I mean, it's just so saddening. And for me, as a scientist, I have to go to the scientific literature. I have to look at what do we know scientifically, you know. And so when you do that, what you learn is that what we normally talk about in the media or what we share on social media is it's something about a certain breed that might be causing the problem. And the truth is that the scientific evidence just does not bear that out. It ends up that if you raise, whether it's a Rottweiler, a Pit Bull, a German Shepherd, any larger dog that you know, or a Doberman Pinscher, whatever it is that might be really intimidating. If you raise it in a positive way, you socialize that dog so that it's met a lot of people when it's young and been in different places and met different dogs and had a lot of really good experiences, there's absolutely no difference in how breeds are responding aggressively, that you can say, oh, this breed is, you know, having a problem with aggression and this one's not. There is certainly an interaction where if you raise a dog in a way that, you know, it's not growing up with that positive experience, you're going to raise the possibility that a dog is going to then respond to others aggressively. And so my guess is that, you know, the dogs in this event were raised in such a way that, you know, they probably were not experiencing what you would hope pet dogs were experiencing if we wanted them to be good citizens. And so I don't think it's about a breed of a dog. I think it's more about how people are treating dogs and how they're raising their dogs. And breed really doesn't help us. It doesn't communicate what you'd think it does about aggression. In fact, if you go to the data and you look at which dogs bite people the most frequently, it's actually small dogs that bite people the most. It's just that they can't hurt you really badly. I would say, really, if we want to have less of this happening, it's all about helping people understand that, you know, raising a great dog is all about making sure, just like with a kid or any other animal, that they feel confident and have positive experiences with others in other strange places. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be stuck where we are right now.
Somebody texted in, well, two texts actually on either side of the equation. One of them wants to know the best way to bring a dog in to socialize with a new baby. Somebody else wants to know about a dog. Wait, it's the other way around. One of them has a baby and wants to know about bringing a dog in. The other one has a dog and wants to know about bringing a baby in. So I guess it's the same way from either direction.
Yeah, so I would. That's a great question. So it depends. Those are definitely two different situations. So if you're bringing a dog into a home that is their new home, it's a little bit easier, and because the dog is going to be experiencing all sorts of new things, and the baby happens to be there. I don't know how old the baby is, but I would certainly, if we're talking about a toddler, so a child who can get around and move. I definitely, with our own dogs, even a dog you very much trust, you would never leave a toddler alone with a dog. I would never do that because it's not fair to the dog, because the toddler may do something that scares the dog, or maybe the kid jumps on the dog, and it's a perfectly normal interaction for a toddler, and it scares the dog, and the dog nips the toddler. I can tell you, I've seen when toddlers or young children are bitten by dogs, it tends to be they get bitten in the face, and the scars can be horrific and lifelong. And so, I love dogs. I'm a huge dog lover, but I certainly, as a parent, would not, even as much as I love dogs and trust them, even my most trusted best friend, I'm not going to leave them alone without parental supervision. With the dog. In terms of introducing a baby into a house where there's already a dog that sort of, this is my house and I'm, you know, like Lady and the Tramp style, it's kind of the same thing, except for you want to be a little more patient with a dog, potentially, that they have a new, friend that they're going to have to make. But normally most dogs are not going to have a hard time with that. You just want to be sensitive and take your time with it, understand that the dog may need some time to approach and explore, and you're definitely going to want to be there and trying to make it as positive as possible.
I get a lot of text here coming in, and I'll combine them all into one big text before we let you go, and that is about choosing the right dog for the right family, rescues as opposed to purebreds, how do you determine a responsible breeder? I'm going to throw all that to you in one handful, Doc, and you can jump in where you feel comfortable.
So if, you know, in our new book, Puppy Kindergarten, we raised over 100 dogs, and we actually raised them in two different ways. And in one case, we raised them on Duke's campus, and we kind of hyper-socialized them. We socialized them with exposure to all sorts of things. They went more places than a normal puppy goes. They met more people than a normal puppy would. Our puppies met over 1,000 people in a few months. They met dogs more often because they were actually raised with other dogs. The other dogs we compared them to, they were raised in people's homes in the normal way that you might raise a dog. And those dogs were very well socialized, too. They met lots of dogs and other people, but at Duke, we hyper-socialized them. We really exposed them to extra stuff. And what we found is that the two dogs, when we compared them on their problem-solving abilities, their ability to remember, their ability to learn, their ability to have self-control, those things were all the same as they developed. It didn't really affect how they thought about the world or solved problems. But what it really affected, and we have very nice evidence on this, is it really affected their emotions, their emotional reactivity, and their confidence. Dogs that were hyper-socialized at Duke were extra confident. They're really able to meet new people and go new places in a way that the dogs raised at home are a little bit more, are a little less confident. So all of this is to just emphasize again that early socialization is really important. So the question, though, is like, where do I get my dog? Where do I find my dog? And our recommendation is that, you know, raising puppies is hard. And that's why I was giving that example. It was exhausting. We had at Duke, we had, you know, over 100 people every semester raising 4 or 5 puppies as a team. And so one idea, and I'm sure in New Orleans there is a place to shelters to work with, there are programs that are known as foster programs where you can actually foster a dog for a weekend or a week, and you can take the dog home from the shelter. You give it a really nice vacation from the shelter, and it's really just to give them a break from the shelter. And you can host them and have a good time. But what happens is you can foster multiple dogs. And in doing this, it's kind of like a tryout. You get to try out and see if this dog is the dog for you. And we've seen, and there's even the beginnings of evidence in the scientific literature, that this is really a great way to find your new best friend. You're helping out a dog at a shelter, but you're also figuring out, is this the best dog for you? I had a friend who did this, and for 2 days they had a dog. It was going fantastic, but then the dog started to show a behavior that they thought was going to be a real problem for them. And, you know, they took the dog back, which is fine because they gave it a break. And then they later found the dog that is just a dream for their life. So I'd say that's my first recommendation. The second recommendation is if you really do want to have a puppy, which is wonderful, you know, you're going to want to think hard about how are you during the workday going to let the dog out. Puppies need to go out 3 times a day. They have 3 periods of activity. They need to go out constantly, both to the restroom and to exercise. And then the next thing is when you get your dog, a lot of people think really hard about breed and that somehow communicates something really important about what they might grow up to be like. And it ends up that the evidence is not there for that scientifically. There's so much individual variability within any one breed. If you get, I love Labrador Retrievers myself. I'm going to get a Labrador Retriever because I imagine it's going to be this way. I mean, breed tells you a little bit, but it doesn't tell you that much. So definitely seeing parents is good. Thinking about breed, I don't know how helpful that is. Fostering is a great idea. And if you're going to get a puppy, make sure you've got the time to really be home for it for the first 6 months and being able to let it out and get it exercised as it needs to be.
Doctor, thank you for your time. Never enough. Author of Puppy Kindergarten, professor of psychology, neuroscience at Duke University, runs the Duke Canine Cognition Center. Books, Puppy Kindergarten, Survival of the Friendliest, The Genius of Dogs. You get them at all usual outlets, Doctor?
You can, that's right, anywhere where books are sold.
And a Netflix show as well. Thank you, sir. 9:55, we'll take a break, find out what Newell Norman's got coming up when we return on WWL.